Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from radium to rubies. In this week's show, we're talking about color. We'll learn how to use a common vegetable to determine acidity and experiment with mauveine, science's first synthetic dye. All this and more on today's episode of Distillations. By definition, the visible world is saturated with color. The objects around us absorb most of the visible light spectrum, the familiar Roy G. Biv, and reflect back those parts we perceive as color. For example, a red apple absorbs all visible colors except red, leaving us with the impression of a juicy red delicious. The chemical properties of an object determine how much energy a given thing can absorb, which in turn determines the color we see. But long before modern scientists unraveled the exact connection between light, energy, and chemistry, early researchers were using today's element of the week to produce vivid colors in pigments and glass. The element chromium gets its name from the Greek chroma, meaning color. The name fits because chromium is one of the most powerful coloring agents available. Chromium was initially misidentified as Siberian red lead, an orange-red mineral later recognized as lead chromate, or the mineral crocoite. In the late 18th century, a yellow pigment made from crocoite became a popular color for clothing. Around the same time, the French chemist Louis-Nicolas Vauquelin was able to isolate elemental chromium from crocoite ore. Chromium is a transition metal, which means it has an incomplete inner electron shell. Transition metals can form bonds in several different ways, depending on what they're reacting with. Chromium can lose or share 1, 2, 3, or even 6 electrons to form ionic, covalent, or coordinated compounds. In fact, chromium is also the only known element that can form a quintuple covalent bond, with 10 electrons shared between two metal centers. Because each kind of bond can absorb a different amount of energy, chromium compounds come in all sorts of colors. One version of chromium oxide, Cr2O3, is green, while another, CrO3, changes color depending on the acidity of the solution it's in. Other chromium compounds can be red, yellow, blue-green, or even violet. Trace amounts of chromium are what make rubies red and emeralds green. Most green paints contain at least some chromium, and it's long been used in green glass. Of course, we're most familiar with chromium in the form of chrome, a shiny, anti-corrosive coating on cars and industrial products. And that's it for this week's Element of the Week. Beyond mere decoration, color can convey mood and meaning. A white wedding dress says one thing, a black funeral suit quite another. Color can even be a cooking tool, like when you check if your steak is done. One of the most common ways chemists employ color is as an indicator for acid-base reactions. CHF's Audra Wolf explains how you can make your own pH meter in today's Chemistry in Your Cupboard.
The plant and vegetable world contains many natural pH indicators. The 17th century chemist Robert Boyle tells about one of these in his 1664 book, Experiments on Color. Boyle described dropping the syrup of violets onto white paper. When combined with an acid, the color changed to red. But when combined with an alkaline substance, the color changed to blue. Boyle believed that such knowledge could help determine the identity and acidity of unknown compounds. A more convenient home pH meter can be extracted from a vegetable you're likely to have in your crisper. The liquid produced when you boil chopped red cabbage can help you test the acidity of things in your home. For instance, if you combine red cabbage juice with household vinegar, the color turns red, indicating that vinegar is an acid. If you add baking soda, a base, the color shifts to blue. You've now neutralized the mixture. Keep adding baking soda, and eventually the liquid will turn green, showing that the final mixture is now basic. This interesting property partially explains why so many recipes for braised red cabbage call for a dash of cider vinegar. The acid keeps the color bright. Violets, red cabbage, and many other pink, purple, and red plants contain pigments known as anthocyanins. These can behave as either a weak acid or a weak base, which means they can gain or lose hydrogen ions depending on the pH level of their environment. The ring structure of the anthocyanin group appears purple under normal conditions because its electrons absorb the yellow, green, and blue portions of the spectrum. But when the bonds change, the energy absorption changes, producing different colors. And that's today's Chemistry in Your Cupboard. I'm Audra Wolf.
Want to know more about something you've heard on our show? Check out our website at distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Just over 150 years ago, William Perkin created Mauveen, the first synthetic dye. Mauveen, and the other dyes that soon followed, caused a sensation in Victorian England, as clothing in previously unimaginable colors suddenly became available. The synthetic dye business bolstered the British and German chemical industries, laying the groundwork for partnerships between science and industry. CHF's Aaron McCleary met with Joe Rucker from the biotech firm Integral Molecular to attempt to recreate the historic discovery of Mauveen. Let's hear how it went.
Hi, I'm Joe Rucker.
And I'm Aaron McCleary, curator of exhibits here at CHF. And we are in the catering kitchen at CHF right now.
So what I'm going to show you today is sort of a streamlined synthesis of Mauveen dye that was originally synthesized by Perkin in the 1850s.
So Perkin was starting with coal tar, right? Which is the sort of gunk left over from coal plants, correct?
Yes. What Perkin was doing was he was taking the coal tar and was taking some distillates from the coal tar and using those distillates as a starting material to actually try to produce synthetic quinine. And when Perkin ended up with this guck at the end of his synthesis, he isolated this purple dye, which wasn't quinine. But Perkin was, you know, was a young man, very, very ambitious, and decided to see if it could be used to dye a fabric. So let me show you first what we're going to be using today. So the first thing we have is a small vial of a kind of a reddish liquid. And this is kind of going to be our coal tar derivatives. What it actually is, it's a mixture of aniline and then two other compounds, paratoluidine and orthotoluidine. All three of these are aromatic compounds. In other words, at the core of the compound is a six-membered ring, a benzene-like ring. Then we have three other components. The three components we have are vinegar. This is going to be our acid source. Ethanol, which is going to be our solvent. And bleach, which is going to be an oxidant. So what we're going to do is we're going to start by measuring out 1 milliliter of vinegar into a plastic conical tube. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take 1 drop of the coal tar derivative, our little aniline toluidine mixture, and I'm going to drop it into the vinegar, so just a single drop. And then what I'm going to do is just mix up the solution a little bit, just to make sure it gets into solution. And what you see, if you're looking at this, you would see kind of a very, very lightly red solution. At the very beginning, when we added the aniline dye to the vinegar, it floated on top, and over about a minute, it'll actually dissolve in the solution. And the dark red aniline solution really becomes just a very, very pale, almost yellowish color. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to measure out 5 milliliters of ethanol into another tube. And this I'm going to do by pouring, which we all know is a very inaccurate method of doing things. And then what we're going to do with the ethanol is we're going to add 10 drops of bleach to the ethanol. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So in order to actually make the Mauveen, what we're going to do is we're going to mix the ethanol bleach mixture in one tube, and we're going to pour it into the tube containing the vinegar and the aniline oil. And hopefully, this will actually give us Mauveen. And so what happened as soon as I mixed the bleach ethanol mixture into the tube, it turned a very, very sort of dark brownish, bluish color. And over approximately the next hour, it's going to turn into a much nicer purple. And so we can actually let that sit for a few minutes while we wait for it to age properly. And as if we look at it again, you can see that it's getting less brown and getting more purple,
right,
even as we sit here.
Oh, that's a lovely color. It's the color of violets now, a really beautiful purple.
So what I have here is a long swath of silk. And what we're going to do is, I said this is a pretty big conical tube. I'm going to stuff it into the conical tube. And then we'll dry it on our kitchen counter here. I have no idea how well this is going to work.
I think it'll be like tie-dyeing.
So hearkening back to this, you know, the 1850s and the 1960s. So let's let it just sit for one more moment to totally soak up. And let's pull it out and see what it looks like.
Why, that's quite pretty.
Yes, that is quite pretty.
It's a very pale pink. I would have predicted that it would be brighter. And in fact, in the samples of historic mauvein, I've seen, you know, things that were dyed with mauvein in Perkin's time, they are still to this day a really brilliant purple.
Well, he was a better dye maker than I am. So obviously, I'm not going into business as a dyer just yet, but we're able to make things that look, you know, pretty similar to what Perkin probably saw when he first started making the mauvein.
Aaron McCleary is CHF's curator of exhibits, and Joe Rucker is director of research and development at the biotech firm Integral Molecular. And that's it for this week's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation appropriately comes from the French painter Claude Monet, as quoted in Jules Claretie's 1881 book, La Vie à Paris. I have finally discovered the true color of the atmosphere. It's violet. Fresh air is violet. 3 years from now, everyone will work in violet. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Special thanks to Hilary Domisch for researching this week's show. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Additional music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.